podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Now look back at the first day's play in the second LV Insurance Test match between England and New Zealand. And this podcast is now being supported by LV Insurance, who of course are sponsors of both Test match and County Championship cricket. And England 258 for seven at the end of the first day at Edgbaston. I think that's almost sort of honours even in a way. Do you feel that? Although England won the toss and they were unbeaten at lunch, no wickets down. Wickets fell in the second session, but then they came back quite strongly at the end. So, even Stevens?
I don't know. Strange sort of day, really. England on top at the start. It felt like New Zealand's day up until sort of about the last hour, hour and a half. You thought that New Zealand making good progress here. They're chipping away. Good first day pitch, or decent first day pitch, but quite good first day bowling conditions. The lights were on, overcast for a large part of the day. The sun finally came out at 5 o'clock. I suppose the answer will lie in tomorrow's weather. I mean, we know the weather's dry, but what sort of conditions are England going to get to bowl in tomorrow? On my weather app, it says it's going to be overcast tomorrow, sort of warm but overcast. So if you get to bowl in overcast conditions, I mean, generally you feel those are sort of good bowling conditions, and England have got the four pace bowlers. So it is one of those, I suppose. Wait till both sides have batted and have a look. It's actually a really good question. Whose day was it, and who's ahead in the match? What does your who's winning graphic say at the end of the first day's play?
Let's have a look. It says that basically England are on top with around about a 60% chance of winning, and that hasn't changed much actually through the day. A little bit down to about 55 maybe when they lost those three quick wickets around the 70 mark, but then back up through that partnership with Dan Lawrence and Mark Wood at the end of the day, back up to around about 60%. New Zealand, their hopes rose a bit with those three quick wickets in early afternoon, but they're now down at 22% and the draw roughly 18%. So it's 60% England, 22% New Zealand, 18% the draw.
Well, I have to say, I'm a bit surprised at that. And I'm a bit surprised that earlier in the day, when England lost those wickets, that they weren't a bit lower and New Zealand were a bit higher. Because to me, it felt as though they were on top. I suppose if you look at the makeup of New Zealand's side, you might say, no Kane Williamson. That is something, although he didn't feature particularly on the scorecard at Lords, did he? He struggled, he failed in both innings, but obviously he's a big player for them, and that they've made all those changes, and they will be batting last, presumably. Well, unless they get 500 and bowl England out. So you can see the factors in favour of England, and with those four quality bowlers as well, and Anderson, Broadwood, and Stone playing on his home ground. I have to say, I don't see the game quite as firmly in England's favour as that, but
I think it's runs on the board.
Yeah, well, there's that. But only 250 of them, though.
Yeah, no, well, nearly 260, and they should get up to 300. And if you look at the history of Edgbaston Test matches, and I mean, I think of, say, the 2005, the great Test match against Australia in 2005 there, all the scores were round about the 280 to 300. Australia needed 280 to win in the final innings.
And hold on a second, Yoz. England made 400 on the first day.
That's true. Yeah. But after that, scores were much lower.
Yeah, they came down.
Yeah, no, good point, good memory. Yeah. I mean, actually, England made 400 in a day.
That's right.
Didn't they? And that was a really flat pitch. Mm. And after that, and I think generally, scores at Edgbaston have been, round about 250 to 300. It's a pitch that just nibbles, doesn't it? And also, I think the new stand helps the ball to swing a little bit, especially when the clouds are up and also the lights are on, which they were for most of the day. So I think it is quite a bowler-friendly pitch, but batsmen can get on top. It's a good cricket pitch, isn't it? Mm. It's a good contest between bat and ball. You get phases of play where the batsmen dominate and then bowlers strike back and get a few wickets, and the new ball can have an impact. And quite often you get lower order runs with the ball getting soft as well. Of course, you get lots of value for shots because it's a fast outfield. And it's just a great venue, isn't it, to play cricket with a brilliant atmosphere as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, what was great about today was the fact that there were supporters, you know, in good number back in the ground. I think I got a bit fed up towards the end of the day's play by hearing that song, I Don't Want To... I think they adapted it, I Don't Want To Go To Work, didn't they, today, from I Don't Want To Go Home. I remember the Wales football supporters singing that, you know, during the Euros, whatever it was, 4 or 5 years ago, when I Don't Want To Go Home, which they wanted to go on in the tournament. I hear that many, many times sung by the Wales fans. But I heard it probably about 4 or 5 times too many today by the end.
It's definitely a venue to go with earplugs, isn't it?
Well,
certainly a special prize for the person today who went as Boris Johnson, armed with an injection, a needle, and he was chasing around after someone dressed as a coronavirus. Mm. So there's plenty of imagination in the Eric Holly stand at Edgbaston. Great effort for England to start the day with an unbroken first wicket stand in the first session. So definitely have to say, wouldn't you? First session to England?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I'm unspectacular. Nothing surprising in a way. Although, having said that, I mean, generally speaking, England haven't put together good opening stands at home in the last few years. But I mean, what I'm saying is nothing surprising in the batting of Sibley and Burns. They batted like Sibley and Burns. Although, you know, as the day went on, as the afternoon went on, I thought Burns became a little bit more expansive and actually played quite a few more offside strokes today. And ultimately, that was his downfall, wasn't it? Chasing a ball that, you know, probably that he might not have played at Lord's early on in that first part of his innings at Lord's.
Wasn't it interesting that in this innings, I mean, they didn't kind of get off to a flyer, but they were purposeful. They were busy at the crease. They pushed singles. And it was in such contrast to the attempts to just nullify New Zealand at the last day of the Lord's Test match. And you know, they got on top of the bowlers a little bit. I mean, without getting up to 100 in the first session, they got to close to 70 and with no wickets down. I mean, that constitutes an excellent start.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's a good first session in a test match for a batting
side? I mean, win the toss. No wickets down. If you win the toss, no wickets down at lunch. I mean, not 20 for
no. I was going to say, what if you're 40 for no wicket at lunch or 45?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You've gone nowhere, have you? But
you haven't gone anywhere. No, I think 60, 70 for naught is fine. 100 for naught is excellent. Mm. So, yeah, I think you give them 8 out of 10 for seeing off the new ball. That's their main job. But, you know, try and get some runs as well. So that was a really good start. Interesting, after lunch, the ball just started to swing. I enjoyed watching the New Zealanders bowl. You know, and what they're doing very simply is, you know, the ball's a little bit older, but they managed to get one shine side really nicely polished. They worked so hard on the ball. And they got both Matt Henry and also Trent Bolt basically bowl the orthodox swinger, and then they just tilt the seam slightly and bowl the same with the same action, and it doesn't swing. It just angles in. Basically, that's a very simple adjustment that modern bowlers make. Sort of, it's almost like a scrambled seam delivery instead of the seam up, but it works very effectively. And it's interesting. I mean, I do really highly rate this New Zealand bowling attack. And actually, I was talking to Simon Doole about the evolution of New Zealand bowlers, and of course, they're famous for, in the past, having these dribblies. If you go to club cricket in New Zealand, they all bowl at sort of 70 miles an hour with the keeper stood up and the ball nips around off horrible cabbage patch pitches. That used to be the case, but they've really improved their pitches over the last 20 years or so. An intervention from John Bracewell, actually, who, of course, played down at Gloucester, was coach at Gloucester for many years, the former New Zealand off-spinner who then became the head coach of New Zealand. And he just said, we've got to get better pitches. We've got to encourage aggressive fast bowlers and proper batting. And as a result of their better pitches in the last 20 years, they've now produced these really potent fast bowlers, Trent Bolt, Matt Henry, Tim Southee, and Kyle Jameson, and many others. And they're really strong, deep bowling attack. Neil Wagner, I didn't mention. You know, those sort of bowlers probably wouldn't have come through for New Zealand 20 years ago because they're club and provincial pitches were so rubbish that it wasn't worth trying to bowl quick. I tried and it was a complete waste of time. So, you know, New Zealand cricket has really evolved its standard of facilities and pitches in particular, and that's paid dividends for their bowling attack, who took 3 quick wickets straight after lunch.
one thing they were able to do today, New Zealand, at the start of the game, was make lots of changes as well. That sort of shows their strength and depth. And you look down that New Zealand side, it doesn't feel... Well, obviously, it's a bit weaker for not having Williamson in, and it's not got Southee in. But, you know, they were able to bring in Bolt today and Henry, you know, and a spinner that was able to take a couple of wickets as well. I mean, that's the other interesting thing. It was the ticklish thing at Lord's as well. We missed out on that third day, and you know, we saw Root bowling on it, we saw Santa bowling on that pitch. I've said this before, that I thought a good spinner at the back end of that match might have caused some problems, and I wonder whether a decent spinner might cause some problems at the back end of this match as well. Patel did get one or two to turn today, and you think, you know, it's going to be dry, isn't it, for the next 3 or 4 days. I don't know whether we're going to get to the fifth day. I don't know. We'll see how the seam bowlers get on tomorrow. But you know, if we do have a fifth day, then the you know, spin could come into it. But England, they're wedded, aren't they, to four quick bowlers? And you can understand why in English conditions. I can totally understand that. And they've not got that balance because of no Stokes or Wokes or whatever, you know, any all rounders. So you know, poor old Jack Leach, he went out for some batting practice today, rather than, you know, the prospect of bowling at Edgbaston, which could offer, because England winning the toss as well. You know, you think, oh, we'd love to, you know, I'd love to bowl in the fourth innings of the match. But so anyway, so New Zealand were able to make changes. England didn't make, barely made a change at all. It's funny actually. A lot of people thought Overton was going to play, but if you think about it, logically, last one out, first one back in. Stone did play in the winter, and he bowled well in his one Test match in India. Mm. So why should Overton sort of, you know, leapfrog him and come back in? And Stone's home ground as well. The other thing as well, it did sort of help them avoid the embarrassment of, if there was any, I don't know if there was, but you know, with Robinson going out, and then of course that incident involving Craig Overton back in 2015. When he was involved in that match, and there was that comment he made on the field, you know, that he said he doesn't remember making. But anyway, he was charged under the ECB code, although it wasn't under, you know, racially offensive language. It was under sledging, abusing a batsman rather than racially abusing. Although, you know, some people who heard it thought, you know, it was over the line and should have been dealt with in a different way. So no Overton Day, Stone in. So England not really tinkering, but New Zealand tinkering a lot with their side and almost giving everyone a chance before the World Test Championship final.
Yeah, which is good strategy. What about England's batting? How much blame was attached to some of the dismissals? I thought Sibley got a good ball. Actually, he was a little bit tentative, sort of poked at it, but it was a good ball from Matt Henry straight after lunch. I thought Joe Root actually also got a good ball as well. He was a little bit, slightly half a bat rather than full face, but again, it just left him slightly. He had to play it, I think. The couple of dismissals that were very much the batsman was culpable was Zach Crawley, I mean, who just looked very tentative, and he was done by a late swinger from Bolt, which he left and nearly bowled him. And then, of course, he was induced to then play at the next one, which stayed out there. And he just got a horrible edge, a ball he shouldn't have played at. Totally unconvincing shot. I suppose a product of recent dismissals. And he's now averaging 10 in about the last 12 innings, which is kind of really sad, isn't it?
Yeah, you say Bolt there, it's actually Wagner. So that you
talk about
the left armour. I think that if you look at the shot he got out to in isolation, you say, why on earth did that happen? But actually, what you've got to do is you've got to look back at three other balls that he's been bowled recently. Yeah. The two dismissals at Lord's and the ball before that got him out. It's funny, isn't it? Sometimes you look at if you just look at the wickets highlights, you get a false picture. So you've got a player who is just a bit all at sea at the moment and lacking confidence. And I, one of the things I wanted to ask you actually, Yoz, as a former professional player, what does, and it goes for bowling as well, bowlers get out of form, what does being out of form feel like? And how do you get it back again?
It's a really good question. I think that from a batsman's point of view, the ones I've seen, they just think about everything too much. So instead of just letting it happen, going out there, I mean, Ian Bell was on our virtual cricket club once, wasn't he? And he talked about the when he made those 300s in an Ashes series, he just felt everything flowed. He didn't really think about it. Just things hit the middle of the bat, feet got into the right position. you know, if head was perfectly over the line. When you're out of form, you're worried about your back lift, you're worried about your grip, you're thinking about how your feet are moving, you fiddle around with your trigger movements, you're trying to get at the ball. So often you find batsmen out of form are trying to push at the ball like this rather than wait for it and play it with slightly softer hands. And there's a sort of slight panic that gets into their whole kind of biorhythms that tries to push at the ball and you know, everything happens in a sort of slightly frenetic sort of way or a very timid sort of way as well, yeah. Like Crawley today. And with bowlers, it's a bit the same. You're nervous running in. You don't run in with purpose. Then you might run in a bit too fast. I remember once, you know, trying too hard against my old team, Middlesex, and bowling an absolute load of garbage. And then I thought, right, slow down, just relax, allow your rhythms to control you and flow. And that's then a much more effective way of playing. And undoubtedly with batting, it has to flow. If you've got too much in your head about things that have gone wrong, trigger movements, footwork, the bowler, you know, the pitch, if you're thinking too much, your mind is going to be clouded. If you're thinking nothing, if you can try and have a clear head, and that's the evidence I've got from talking to many batsmen, you're going to be in a much better state. I mean, James Bracey, God knows what was in his head. I mean, he must have been lying awake for days, sort of desperate to get out there and play his second test innings, having got a duck at Lord's. And, you know, it had all just went horribly wrong. He poked at one that he didn't need to play at, first ball. I mean, he'll look back at that. It's a horror show.
Yeah, he had to sort of drag himself from the crease. So, I mean, he'll probably get another go in the second innings, but that might be it. That might be it for a while, won't it? So, you know, he knows he's got one innings to, you know, show the cricketing world what he's about. There's a chance, reasonable chance. Who knows how the future pans out? You never know, do you, that he'll get another go somewhere down the line. You know, way to runs in county cricket, but he's going to come out of the side, isn't he, sometime to allow Josh Butler to come back in.
As well as sponsoring the Tests and County Championship, LV General Insurance are also jointly funding a £1 million initiative with the ECB. Entitled hashtag Funds for Runs, the investment supports focus areas of grassroots cricket. Clubs across the country can apply for grants now at ecb.co.uk/fundsforruns. Therefore, this summer, we're going to be doing things slightly differently during this mid-roll promotion for our partner by using the time to talk about a different Funds for Runs project each podcast. The hashtag Funds for Runs Community Fund was launched in November 2020 and is available to financially support areas of the recreational game that have been impacted by COVID-19. Most notably, this includes areas where access to cricket is more limited, such as among children from deprived backgrounds, diverse communities, women's and girls' sections, and disability groups. We'll kick things off in the next podcast by talking about Stoke Newington Cricket Club's Women and Girls Outreach Programme in East London. I'm really looking forward to this. It's brilliant that sponsors don't neglect cricket's grassroots. Because after all, most of the England team got into the game through club cricket and the many thousands of volunteers who keep it going. So go to ecb.co.uk/fundsforruns for more information. You know, I used to be a coffee addict. Couldn't function without two double-strength lattes in the morning and another to follow, especially if I was going to the gym or on a cycle. It played havoc with my nervous system. Since I've discovered Mission Teas, that's all changed. I feel energised, but not hyperactive. Mission was founded by Tom Whittle on a 9-month ride through South America. His experience was transformed by the amazing properties of Argentinian teas based around the herbs yerba mate and matcha, renowned for their slow release of energy, and rooibos, famous for its anti-inflammatory effects. Mission now produce a range of herbal teas specially designed for hydration, energy boosts, relaxation, and even sleep. Numerous GB sports stars swear by them, including a number of the England cricket team and some famous footballers too. Mission teas are not only genuinely beneficial, but they're actually delicious and don't leave you with stale coffee breath or constantly needing the toilet. Honestly, I feel totally upbeat, whether in the gym, coaching the kids, or recording this podcast, and I'm sleeping better as well. I highly recommend you try some. Mission are offering listeners of this podcast 20% off your first order if you go to missionuk.com and type in the code cricketer20, all one word, at checkout. So that's missionuk.com, use the code cricketer20 and enjoy. Now, the star of the day, undoubtedly, for England, and he's the winner of the LV Insurance hashtag In With Heart Award. So we're giving an award each day for a player who gets really stuck in and shows a lot of grit and determination. The hashtag In With Heart Award. And that undoubtedly is Dan Lawrence. Of course, you've got to give some credit to Rory Burns, who made a very good 81 at the top of the order. But Dan Lawrence really rescued the situation very effectively. I love the way he played. I mean, he's not a purist by any means. He's got in some ways, quite an ugly method. But he's effective. And I like the way he played, having got out to a horrible shot at Lords. He wasn't afraid, and this is a good example of not being constrained by lack of runs, by still backing yourself. And he did. And, you know, he got a couple of sort of lucky fours early on, balls that he tried to leave, that cannoned off the blade, even those he middled, actually, and they went for four. But as time went on, he played some really, really good shots. And I like the way that he stepped right across to Bolt, outside off stump, and worked him through the leg side off the stumps. In actual fact, there were essences of Steve Smith about the way he played, you know, where he got right outside the off stump and worked balls off the stump through the leg side, playing to his own strengths, and then forcing the bowlers in the end to go even wider, and then he drilled them through the offside. So, you know, it was a really positive, purposeful and skillful innings, I thought.
Yeah, and the point we were making about Zach Crawley, you know, when you're all sort of scrambled and you're struggling, and, you know, he came out and was out for early on today as he was at Lords. The same could have been true for Dan Lawrence as well, because he's another one who might be jettisoned waiting for Ben Stokes to come back. So this was his opportunity, and he didn't play a very good shot. He really didn't in the last Test match, and so, you know, a really admirable effort. And I suppose, you know, it's going to be your day when you try to leave one and it takes the bat and goes down to third for four. Yeah. You know, you sort of think, well, perhaps it might be my day. But he did play a couple of lovely offside shots, and that movement across as well, flicking the ball into the leg side. He's unorthodox. I mean, one of the sort of feelings I had today while I was watching is, you know, are they starting to make English men's batters in sort of Frankenstein's lab? You know, they're not all things of beauty, are they, by any means? They're sort of like sort of hybrid and hodgepodges, and where are the classical players gone? The classic players. Joe Root is one, I suppose, and, you know,
he's quite old school, isn't he, really?
Well, I suppose he is, but, you know,
he's a connection with the past, and he grew up watching Michael Vaughan. Yeah. You know, Michael Vaughan was a very classic sort of player, wasn't he? And comes from the same club as Rooty. And but, you know, the new generation, the modern generation, all do it. If you look at the sort of the younger players in that England side, Dominic Sibley, Rory Burns, to a lesser extent, Ollie Pope, undoubtedly Dan Lawrence. They are all quite crab-like in a way, and very individual, very idiosyncratic. I suppose Zach Crawley would be more of your classic player. He's got a more upright sort of style. So, you know, you still get some, but each to their own. And I think Smith has had a massive influence, and he will have an even bigger influence with kids growing up, especially in Australia, watching the way he plays. Look at Marnus Labuschagne. He's a complete kind of carbon copy, isn't he? So it's good to see, I think. I think it's interesting watching the way the game evolves and players find ways to make runs. And well done to Dan Lawrence. You know what he has got? One thing really stands out, the very fast hands. Because he gets into positions where he's almost leaving his stumps exposed. Then the speed of his hands gets the ball away to the boundary or through the field. So that's an invaluable asset.
One thing that I noticed today, just sort of trawling through Twitter, is a tweet from Crickwiz, who said that actually Lawrence played the ball later than any other England batsman today, which I thought was interesting. So if you can do that, was it, what did they say? See it early, play it late. And also, you know, Graham Gooch, just going back to that thing about techniques, Graham Gooch said, I don't coach batting, I coach run scoring. So ultimately, you know, it is about how many, isn't it? How many you're able to score. I suppose the worry is about how much your technique will be exposed by top class bowlers. And New Zealand they've got some very good bowlers, India have got some excellent bowlers, and Australia have got some excellent bowlers in their conditions as well. So there's going to be a lot of testing on the way in the next few months, and it's about how you stand up to that and come through, and whether that technique that looks a bit odd can come through it. It may be that it does. It may be that it just gets exposed, and England have lots of problems in their batting lineup. And there were some problems today, weren't there? There were some poor shots, really. I'm surprised. You said Sibley got a good ball, and it was a goodish ball. I'm surprised he got out to it, Sibley, because he's normally pretty good at letting that sort of ball go, and that's one of his strengths. You feel. Perhaps it was just a bit too. Perhaps it was just a fraction close, and he just was drawn into it. Perhaps that was what it was. But normally in that channel, he lets so much go, and of course he wants the bowler to come over to him, and then he works it through the leg side for his runs. So sort of not quite one thing nor the other today from Sibley. 35, excellent from Burns. Looked really fluent. I thought that actually shows. You know, when you're confident, it shows what you can do. I thought he played really nicely, but then perhaps that fraction bit of overconfidence got him out, because his dismissal was not that dissimilar in a way to Brace's. But of course, we look at Brace and think, oh no, Burns, you give him a pass because he made 81. But if you put the two together, well, they will put the two together because they were in successive balls, neither looked particularly good shots.
No, they didn't. And well done to England in the end for getting up to the close, nearly 260 for seven. Both Ollie Stone and Mark Wood making valuable contributions. Woody still there at the wicket. He was talking to me earlier in the summer about his desperation to make more of his batting and to make more runs. And actually, in fact, he used to be a batsman for his club, Ashington. And he's desperate. I think that would be an invaluable little asset for Woody if he could just get a few more 20s, 25s, with Anderson and Broad really not registering too many runs. It would be great if Wood could be someone at number nine who could just get those key runs when England really need them. So, honours even, but England certainly on top in terms of getting the runs on the board, I suppose. And it'll all depend now on whether they can get past 300 and whether New Zealand can see off the new ball themselves and make a fist of this pitch. I think there's plenty of wickets out there, but there's also plenty of runs. So the game is nicely poised. Let's leave it there, and we'll join you at this time tomorrow for our look back at the second day's play in this LV Insurance second test match from Edgbaston.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.